Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Mobility Radio, featuring industry leaders and innovators in mobile technology.
Good morning. This is Brett Cooper with Atlanta Mobility Radio. A couple great guests on this morning. I'm going to start us off with Dan Homerick, who's from Star Mobile, is the name of the company. And Dan, you want to give us a quick recap on what Star Mobile does?
Sure. Good morning, Brett. Star Mobile delivers enterprise mobility faster, simpler, and at a lower cost than any other solution on the planet.
Awesome. And when you say enterprise mobility, what does that look like?
So when you think about how enterprises segment their mobile spend, a lot of the spend is on business to consumer. Historically, has been on consumer facing applications, and we predominantly focus on enabling the employees and business partners and associates to take advantage of the mobile expertise that's available out there.
Cool. So can you talk about an example of that? So when you say that, I'm assuming like inside the four walls, like an insurance company, what would they use Star Mobile for?
Well, it is a great example. Have a customer who is an insurance company that had a need to do verification of claims. And so integrating the mobile solution, the mobile device, leveraging the camera components, geolocating, and implementing that into a workflow that provided them the opportunity to streamline their claims processing was an example of how to use that inside the four walls.
Cool. And you say you guys do it cheaper. What's the how do you get that cost component out of that? Because I know mobile is pretty expensive for a lot of folks. How do you drive that down?
It is. So there's a lot of different needs in the mobile space, and what we focus on is where companies have already made a significant investment. So they have a tremendous amount of investment in software and or systems that we can take advantage of and leaving them basically untouched. So you think about tens or hundreds of millions of dollars that companies have put into bespoke software, systems like SAP, Oracle, PeopleSoft, HR, you know, there's a plethora of them out there. And we're able to create mobile applications out of those without any changes to the back end whatsoever. And so we do it very economically.
Cool. Any particular flavors? So I'm assuming web-based technologies, so stuff that looks terrible on a mobile screen, you guys make it mobile?
Yeah, that's a real good example. Basically anything web we can address, and then we have more capabilities beyond that. But when you think about how web applications have been designed for a different, never a palm print, right? Maybe a desktop print, but never a palm, something you hold in your hand. Yes, what we do is we have a number of things that our technology provides. It's 12 different transformations, and we're able to take a complex set of functionality and reduce it to something that's really focused for that end user using that device.
What's that the word transformation used? What is that context of using that? Is that they take technology or take the one technology and translate it into something else? Or
that's a great question. So one of the things that we do, for example, if I'm navigating an application that may have, let's say, 17 screens literally in a workflow that would be a traditional ERP system, and let's say it's an approval workflow, there could be up to 17 screens. Well, one of the things is that we reduce the number of screens that someone has to process in order to complete a task, such as a shopping cart approval. All right, so that's a reduction. The other is a focus, being able to put a focus on a singular or a series of events. There's other things such as just creating shortcuts. And basically eliminating, while preserving the workflow, eliminating the need to touch multiple screens in a workflow, for example.
Cool. And so I'm going to ask this is more of a business question. When you go in and try to convince somebody to take a bunch of stuff out of a screen, how does that go over? I mean, my experience is that the business always wants to put everything onto every single page, which is probably how the web apps got that way in the first place.
Right.
How do you guys work through, when you engage with customers and actually convince them to get rid of these 42, other paths they don't really need?
That's a great question, Brett. There's two things that I've encountered in my career. One is the IT person who's trying to solve the issues for a large community, meaning that they have 50 use cases they're thinking of, rarely take the perspective of one individual use case. So what we do is we get out there and talk about that one individual use case. In the example of a manager who may be walking from, I'm sure everybody here has done this at one point, Terminal A to Terminal B in Atlanta, Hartsfield, Jackson International, right? You want to be able to do what we call RTD or right thumb drive. So having a workflow that reduces the transaction set to that for that particular use case is what we do. And then because mobility can be so expensive using other mechanisms, with our solution, we can create multiple workflows optimized for the individual use case very inexpensively. So our solution would be more likely to be, let's create a second app that has that additional functionality, or maybe a third or fourth app that has that additional functionality.
Nice. And what's the origin of Star Mobile? Where did it come from?
So we were founded out of a research. There's a professor, Raghupathy Siva Kumar at Georgia Tech. He and a couple of his students did some research work, and it was actually a problem that Siva had when he was working out, and he couldn't log his information right without having to go through multiple iterations of solutions. And so they started addressing the problem, and lo and behold, they came up with this idea, and they started doing research on it. They were introduced to a gentleman by the name of Todd Freiberger, and I met Todd maybe 5 or 6 years ago when he was at SAP, and Todd's quite a visionary, very effective leader, and been in the mobile space for a long time. And they hooked up and started to commercialize this. So it's gone from early days of being basically research-driven into the commercialization aspect, and now we're out there in full force.
Cool. Any case studies or big successes recently you can talk about?
Yeah, there's one that's that I think is particularly pressing in terms of it highlights the example, the need for mobility really well. And because I'm going to tell a little bit of the story that may not be so flattering, I'll reserve the name, but this is a genuine business case locally. So we had a prospect come to us, and they said, we've got a...
Wait, is this where we start guessing who it is?
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Okay, sorry,
I'm signing over here.
Yes, prospect comes to you and, yes. And says they got a problem. Yeah.
And they said, you know, we've got a requirement to have a mobile app, and because of the shifting priorities of the organization, which we find a lot, they didn't have the time, the bandwidth, resource allocation, or the economy to get to a mobile application. And we talked with them about our technology, and they challenged us to prove it. And so we said, well, give us access to your back-end system, and they did. And 4 days later, we came back with an application that was running on an iOS device connected to their back-end system. And they said, well, if you really can do that, why don't you do four more? So they are going to be launching a series of mobile apps here in the next month based on our technology here. And it was a proof point from that. Now, what's particularly interesting out of that is as they continued their roadmap, they have a sister company that had a need for a mobile app as well. And because of our technology, he's able to leverage these web front ends, and do that. They actually are now leveraging their existing talent and pool set rather than mobile developers to use our technology to build mobile apps, which is a pretty interesting twist.
Nice. And the actual end consumer device, is it iOS only, iOS, Android?
iOS, Android. What's that?
It was trailing off there.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Something about a barrier.
I had a flashback, yeah.
Yeah.
iOS, Android, and Windows. So, and HTML. We offer native apps on the iOS and the Android because it provides the best response, best design is what users are expecting. And that also allows us to fully incorporate all the native features of the devices.
Do you find one is more prevalent than the other? iOS versus Android?
Yeah, iOS seems to be most prevalent in the enterprise.
Was it probably 70-30?
Somewhere in there. Yeah, it's pretty amazing actually.
Nice. And then so you knew Todd for a couple of years, and mm-hmm. Todd called you up and said, "Dan, we need somebody that's going to help drive the product." Or what was the when did you get pulled into this big genesis?
Yeah, so I'd started a mobile company back in 2009 here in Atlanta, focused on mobilizing the enterprise, and sort of came out of the gate a little bit early, candidly. And then we were putting our focus on building mobile apps around SAP. Then SAP acquired Sybase and sort of derailed that. And lo and behold, Todd was involved in that whole SAP mobile strategy thing. So I didn't know if Todd was friend or foe, and I decided, well, if I'm going after that space, he better be a friend, right? So we developed a good relationship, and my early interaction with Todd was he was one of the few people who really got mobile and enterprise, right, who really understood that there was tremendous capability between the two. So I've always sort of followed him from afar. My company got acquired by a professional services organization called Mobiquity, which is based out of Boston, Massachusetts. Ran the Southeast down here for a couple of years and grew that. And then reconnected with Todd and Siva back in August of last year. And they were kind enough to ask, and I was kind enough to ask them, right? Because it just looked like the right kind of match.
Yep.
And we've been working at it ever since.
So what's next for you guys? What's 2015 look like for Star Mobile?
More penetration into the accounts. We are continuing to focus on the areas of growth where we see opportunities that persist. The greatest opportunities are the ones that are closest to the end customer. So not so much B2C, although that's a capability, but more working with employees and associates that are working close to the customer. So it could be field service, it could be sales support, things of that nature.
If you had to pick one of those three, which one would it be?
Well, I would throw healthcare in there because healthcare is just ever evolving. Yep. But again, that's customer, what's closest to the customer. So I'm going to say customer service oriented tasks.
Got it. So if you're customer service oriented, have an existing web app, need to be mobilized in less than 4 days, have you said? I'm going to quote you on that.
Yeah. I did say four days.
I heard 4 days. Yeah, so. Yeah. If you deliver in three, people are going to be excited.
Well, okay. There, you just set the bar for us. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I might have started with eight, but we'll get there eventually. And then Star Mobile's contact information. So people wanted to get a hold, actually get a demo. How would that work out?
Easiest way is to contact myself, dan@starmobileinc.com. And I'll get you connected to the
And
to
I'm
the right
assuming
people.
Your website is also starmobileinc.com. That's pretty simple. And the format for getting engaged with you guys, do you guys have like an online demo people can take a look at, or is it something where you shoot you an email, you shoot them back a link, and then get some stuff installed?
Yeah, so we have a pretty simple process to prove out the technology. To call it a process may even be a stretch. We'll sit down, we'll have a conversation with you and say, what do you want to do? Right. And then we'll look at the workflow and we'll say, well, if this is a workflow you want to do, we just need some simple artwork. So we use your brand. And if you don't have it, we'll leverage what you already have. And then give us access to that back end system. We'll come back around and we'll demonstrate an app working for you.
Nice. Cool stuff.
It is.
Awesome. Thanks for being here this morning. We'll come back around and ask a couple more questions after I chat with Michael and M. Cole over here. So turn to the right. You guys can't see it, but turn to the right. And Michael Flanagan and M. Cole Jones are here from Covello. The name Covello, what's the origin of that? When you guys want to throw that out there?
You're telling that story. I'm not doing that one. I always mess it up.
All right. So the name Covello, it has English and Spanish origin. So co means collaboration. Velo is pronounced velo, if you can say it the Spanish way. I struggle there sometimes.
Pollo?
There you go. Thank you. See?
I just know it's because chicken, pollo, it's pronounced. It's got two L's.
Yeah. There you go.
And so did I just pronounce the name of your company incorrectly? Should it be Covello?
No.
You know what?
Okay.
No,
Covello.
That won't work. but the Velo part of Covello means to grow. So when you put Covello together, it means collaborative growth. So we are a collaborative growth company.
Awesome. My exposure, just learning about you guys in the past, was those are the guys that come in and do the cool workshops, and I'm assuming that's just a small piece of what you do though. What's the breadth of the type of things you guys help people out with?
It comes from my background. So we have a lot of friends who do a lot of different cool stuff, from photography to graphic design. So we really help kind of get people started. We really specialize in, like, if you want to start something, if you actually want to do something, that's we can help you with anything and everything, which is hard to pitch most of the time because it's like, hey, so we can solve your problem no matter what it is. We've done a lot of work in technology. That's what we tend to work in. So mobile apps, web apps, all that kind of stuff. But we've got one, our law firm actually is one of our clients. They're awesome. And we're helping them kind of do just a workshop kind of process to reimagine how they think law. So it's a little bit of everything. So it's nothing we can't touch, really.
How do you, when you go in there, you see this company and they're like, we need some help with some stuff. Like, how do you actually pick the one thing that you're going to try to help them with? Or what's that process look like when you engage with somebody?
The biggest thing for us is to figure out what they actually want to move forward with, or what have they tried some stuff doing in the past. We don't try to sell you. I might know instinctively from listening to you what you actually need, but you have to tell me what you're willing to do. And if we can't agree on that, then we might just be friends. That's nothing wrong with that. So we try to just pick the thing that they're willing to move forward on first, even if they need to, move this whole mountain over here, which is actually in the way.
Yeah. And I guess the different types of formats where you've worked with people and helped people out, what do those look like? What are the top three or four that most people use your help for, your guidance for?
Let's see.
Workshop is the one I knew, which is like, you come in and do a lot of that, like you said, the brainstorming and whiteboarding. Right. What's the 2, 3, 4, or I don't know if that's number one, but.
That would lovely be number one. That's easy for us to do. It's almost we do that one in our sleep. Number two is really like any kind of product development. So we do that for AT&T, mobile app development, that kind of stuff, projects. As people get that, it's really straightforward. Other things that would be number four would be probably kind of helping you collaboratively build a solution around what you want to do inside your company. So if you wanted to build like an innovation process or innovation center, or how do we engage with the community, that would be like number four. And then number three is somewhere in between like ideation and product development. It's kind of like helping you launch something. So those are pretty much the four kind of roles there.
What's the hardest thing you guys run into when you're trying to help somebody launch something? What's the? I'm sure it's like the one thing you run into every single time. You're like, no, we've seen this. It's not going to work out.
Well, I would say the hardest thing is, part of our core, how we got started, when we first started our company, 3 months later, we secured AT&T as our first enterprise client, you know, and we were excited about that because we actually wasn't going to focus on large enterprise companies right off the bat, but they came to us and they, you know, through a relationship that we had, they knew that we can actually develop a solution within a small window of time, which would normally take them 9 months just to get started. So within 3 months, we built out a new technology platform for AT&T for them to do a private demo at CES. You know, it was targeting the $2 billion industry. The solution is now valued over, you know, $30 million. So so now, again, with that being our first solution, that was great. I'm like, okay, great. Yeah, we can go talk to more enterprises. Man, we got this great use case. And we were able to engage more enterprises. But the challenge was, you know, creating a synergistic opportunity between large companies and small companies. And, you know, the challenge was, okay, I'm a large company. I can't show and expose my vulnerabilities, not even really to you. You know, our marketing team does a great job marketing all the great things that we can do, quote unquote, internally. But we struggle because we're so large, it's hard for us to be innovative. So the challenge was being able to create that synergy between us being small and them being large. For us as a small company, you know, a net 30, 60, 90 can bury us as far as payment goes.
Yeah.
So it's just trying to find that synergy and being able to, you know, create a win for both sides of the aisle.
What's the, I guess you talked a little about that, the big small company space. If you have to choose, is it you want like half your clients to be big, half to be small? Is it like 80-20 or is it just, it doesn't matter, just whoever has the coolest ideas is willing to pay? Is that...
Exactly.
I'll pay you net 180. Is that
not happening.
No, I think for us it's more about who is willing to actually move forward. You know, mm-hmm. there's mm-hmm. the biggest challenge on the other side of the big companies. Small companies don't feel like they have to pay or they don't have funds for it. And I'm not asking you for, you know, $10,000 right now. I'm saying we can do it this way and we can work with you. We're very flexible in everything that we do. So it depends on who wants to move forward. You know, AT&T is fun to work with, especially on that project, because they were mm-hmm. like running it like a true kind of startup, just like, oh, here goes some stuff and we'll get out the way and kind of just check in on you when we need you. And then with small firms and things like that, people who really want to do it, it's always fun to work with those who kind of we can actually collaboratively work with and kind of give feedback. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to do what you want. But if we can actually work together, that's when we produce something great. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and Michael, I got a question for you. So you had worked, did some of the work down with Hypotenuse? I can't pronounce
Hypopotamus. It's hard. I think I can't. Don't worry about it.
Try saying that three times real fast.
Yes, so you'd worked with those guys. When you look at incubators like that and places where they're like the co-working space, where companies try to come together, what are the things that if you give advice to people of here's what works in innovation, here's the things that probably aren't going to move you as quickly, how would you guide somebody or give somebody advice on that?
So the biggest thing there, so great question. I didn't know you were going to ask that one. For co-working spaces, usually the focus is on kind of either just kind of loosely getting people together and not doing anything intentionally. And so for a co-working space to really be successful in an incubator, the big ones we hear about, 500 startups, they have a great network. And so for a co-working space to really be effective, you have to have a really good network and really have lots of people who are going to be hands-on and ultimately helping that company shape and grow. And then from an idea perspective, I have a degree in chemical engineering, so I take a page from science, you know. Often at Georgia Tech, we got 2 weeks to figure something out. So it's kind of like you try something and you see if it works or not. It's not about having a true process, because innovation isn't a process, it's a mindset. So it's really about just going through and kind of picking ideas, picking some metrics, and then trying it out, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work. And you get a lot farther, a lot faster than if you say, this is our 6-month plan, and this is what we're going to do on day one. And then day 90, we do this. That usually is going to slow you down.
Yeah. Do you prescribe any sort of methodology like lean startup, or is it depend on the company and clients you guys talk to?
It really depends on both. We have a hybrid between like lean startup and scientific method and design thinking. So it really depends on what it is. If it's something more human centric, we might pick something like design thinking as a process. If it's something that is an idea that needs to go fast, we'll pick up lean startup methodology. But the overarching thing is really just using the hypothesis and testing it out. And, you know, everything I say is hypothesis until I prove it wrong.
Can you talk about design thinking a little bit? So you're probably the third person that's actually mentioned that to me in the last week or two. I'm going to be honest here. I don't actually know that much about it. Can you give me like the 30-second flyover of what it is or how people should be thinking about it?
Sure. You keep asking me these good questions today.
I can ask some bad questions.
No. It's fine.
I'll switch over. Just ask me the bad ones. Yeah. Ask me the good ones.
No, design thinking is basically a process that was developed by kind of designers and these people who had to do these really heavy customer-driven things. So when you're designing a shopping cart, you know, how as a industrial designer do you make sure somebody can push it down the aisle? So it's really about going through a process of putting yourself in the person's shoes. After you do that, you know, designing a prototype, testing that prototype, and just going back and forth until you get a solution that actually works in real life.
Yeah.
So that's what design thinking is really about in like a nutshell.
How does that vary? You know, we've done some lean stuff at our organization in the past, but it seems like that is a little bit of a fork in the road from lean. I mean, how do you get people to think about one versus the other?
The biggest thing between lean and design thinking is in the fact that design thinking is more about really experiencing the other person's point of view and trying to solve something for them in a very, really getting at what the pain is. Lean startup is more about you have that thing and you just keep iterating on it and you do it as quickly and as effectively as possible. It's about failing fast. Whereas design thinking focuses more on getting more insight. So every time you come up with a new iteration, it's better. And then you're really solving that problem more and more and more. So it's just more emotional. If I had to put it that way,
yeah,
it's more emotional.
Yeah, put yourself in the shoes.
Right.
So you guys have been doing this for over a year now, right? So Covello's, what's the start date?
August 5th, 2013. That's when we first started.
So it's been a while. So yeah, you two guys founded it together.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the origin? You guys were sitting around and let's go start a company. Yeah. We got nothing else to do. Let's quit our jobs and go do something different.
Well, honestly, we're involved in the technology community largely. I used to work for TAG, Technology Association in Georgia, the largest tech association in the country, and Michael again being entrenched within the startup space. And we started was part of these corporate innovative jam sessions that Michael was instrumental in kickstarting at Hypotamus. And it was a mix of corporations, large, medium, and small, and startups. And we would have these jam sessions. And we just had some honest conversations about the challenges of, again, large companies wanting to work with small companies. And we was just there taking notes and just listening. And we just kept hearing the same pain, large companies not really truly being able to innovate and disrupt. Small companies not having access to work with those large companies, you know. So we just heard that pain, and we had some ideas separately, and we shared when we just came together as friends about being able to help create that collaboration between large and small companies, because that's really going to help create a economic impact. We believe the future of work is more so about collaboration and relationships than anything else.
Yeah.
So one day, I had a bad week. He had a bad week. And he was like, we should just do that company we started. I'm just like, yeah, we should. We just started we started whiteboarding. And then next thing you know, I came back and be like, yeah, so I'm no longer at TAG. So let's get started, man.
No pressure.
No pressure.
No pressure.
I jumped in first. You can't jump in. Cannot jump in second, right?
It's like double dutch.
Yeah. Nice. For small companies, when you guys counsel them or give them guidance on working with big companies, what does that process look like? Can you talk a little bit through how you guys engage or how you bring them in?
Well, I get started with that. It really all depends on where the company is. You know, if you come into our office and it's like, "Hey, I have a great idea." You know, okay, that's great. You know, how far are you in
you
that
don't
process?
Roll your eyes, do you?
Oh, no, I don't roll my eyes in front of them. No, I don't roll my eyes. But it really depends on where they are. If it's just a great idea and they're just, you know, pitching their idea, we may ask them the question, well, are you familiar with the business model canvas? Like, oh, what's that? Can I go buy it? Like, well, you can do it on a whiteboard or you can go online. But we'll give them that resource as a first step because, you know, startup, you know, culture is kind of a fad for some. And there are people that are out there playing startups. They have the same idea that you've been hearing about for the past 18 months. So we have to qualify them and see where they are. And based on where they are, we'll determine how we engage them. And we're not selfish. You know, we're not saying that we have all the answers. You know, we may refer them to, well, you may want to, you know, apply for the tag business launch competition, or you may want to look at one of the, you know, local accelerators or incubators to get involved in. But based on what they share with us, we'll determine where we are placed and whether it's working with us or working with someone else in the community.
What does it mean when you kind of touched on this? Somebody says playing a startup. I've heard somebody else say this. This is another thing I heard recently, and I just assumed it meant that you're going out and doing the motions, but your heart's not in or something. Can you give your thoughts or your terminology? What it is?
Well, I have to give a shout out to my girl Jen Bonet because we had lunch one day and we both was on the same page about people out there playing startup. This is what I would say. If you go to startup-related events and there's this one person or this one group and they're at every single event, they're not running their company. You know, you shouldn't be at every single event. You know, that's playing startup. You're just out there, oh, I got this great idea. And then when you start learning startup terminology, well, you know, we had to make this pivot and we had to sit down and do some more customer discovery. And if you're hearing the same thing for, you know, 12 to 18 months, you know, from that person or that group, that's playing startup. So
nice. When you look at a lifespan, when you look at a startup, are you assuming that by 6 months they'll have something? I mean, a lot of people talk about having to pivot and multiple times, and a lot of people, you know, we're doing lean, we're going to go out lean. Is there a point in time where you look at somebody and say, you're probably playing startup?
Yeah, I think
is it a time frame or is it a mindset?
I think it's more of a mindset than anything else. You can be playing startup from day one. One of the biggest things we have to overcome with some of the smaller companies, they think their idea is the greatest one in the world. It's not. You know, there's no original idea. As everybody are, it's been millions of people who live before you. They've probably come up with it. Somebody mm-hmm. wrote it on the back of a napkin somewhere. And the second thing is, if somebody buys your idea, if you have a customer, then you got something. So in certain industries, that could take longer periods of time. But as long as you're learning and you're building the solution that, you know, will help you get customers or people have expressed interest in, then you're not really playing a startup. And the other thing about startup that nobody wants to talk about, it is sacrifice. You know, mm-hmm. it's not, you don't go wake up every day and just have a check and money and just be like, yeah, startup. You know, you're 9 to 5 is not 9 to 5.
You're going to the office.
Startup. You know, you don't do that. I know over the winter break, I had to redo a lot of our brand and stuff mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. And I just spent nights in the office. That's startup. You know, I don't get paid a 9 to 5 check. So if I got paid 9 to 5, I'd be at home at 5 o'clock. So, you know, startup is about, it's a lot about sacrifice. And it's also about just learning as you go. And the people that are successful have the mindset that, you know, I don't have all the answers. I'm not saying anything I'm saying is right, but I'm willing to listen to you. Even if I know I got the magic bullet over here, I'm willing to listen mm-hmm. to you and work with you the way like Star Mobile does and other companies that are successful do, because it's, at the end of the day, you're selling to a person, so you got to at least have a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, and Dan, compliment you. I've never been to your office and heard anybody yell, yeah, startup. Yeah. You guys got that. For you guys, when do you draw that line? Like Star Mobile as an organization, when did it go from being a startup to being, you know, a solution company? Or,
yeah, that's,
or are you guys still a startup in your mind?
That's a great question. You know, I was thinking about a comment just made, and the smartest people I know ask the most questions. They rarely have the most answers. They don't have the answers till they've asked the questions. Mm-hmm. So this constant view and thought process around what do I need to know that I don't know. In our industry, in our job at Star Mobile, there's a lot that we don't know. There's a lot we do know, right? But at the same time, we're always out there exploring. So on one hand, we still have that enthusiasm and excitement and desire to learn So we can be very successful, and we won't be able to be as successful as we want without that inquisitiveness, right? So that startup mentality. So we want it to be, we want it to permeate and be persistent. On the other hand, at some point in time, a company says, well, how long have you been in business, right? And they start asking these questions. You're like, yeah, I know we got to answer those. So we began to make that transition. For us, it happened to be when our funding went predominantly from, look, we're going to, you know, you're going to get some grants, and then you're going to be funded to prove out your idea. And now you need to go have commercial success.
Yep.
And with that, there comes certain responsibilities. And so that's when you sort of hang up one hat and, you know, it says startup on the inside, but on the outside it says Star Mobile.
Just turn
it
on. Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, I will buy that hat.
So, yeah, right.
So. $40,000.
Yeah.
Goes as a free install. So, Cole, can you talk a little bit about you guys were on TechEdge, I believe, recently, and you guys talked about the fishbowl.
Is this? Oh, yeah.
Tell me more about the fishbowl exercise and what you guys come in and you coach people on. What does that look like?
So fishbowl, outside of being a really cool name, basically is where large companies will pitch their challenges and ideas to qualified startups. So think Shark Tank, but reverse.
Switch pitch, is that another name for it?
Well, that's one of our competitors. You know, but yeah, I mean, you can think about switching the pitch. So like for us, the reason why we started Fishbowl was because, again, just removing that wall, removing that barrier of allowing startups and corporations to work together, and not to be afraid to do it early on. You know, one thing that we've learned in our success with Covello is that, the earlier that you can get that engagement between, both large and small companies, it will help that large company be leaps and bounds ahead of their competitors. And we have several use cases to speak to that. But what we do that is a huge value to Fishbowl is that we are engaged from the pitch all the way through the product launch.
So you guys coach the companies on it, or
absolutely.
What's your coaching look like in that scenario? I feel like there's coaching on both sides that has to happen. What does that look like?
So like, one of the formats for the fishbowl with the event is, you're a big company. I don't really want to see 20 slides. You're going to get 5 slides in 8 minutes. If I'm going to help you figure out, we're going to help you figure out what you need to say to a developer or a group of people. And then on the other side, we go curate the people who can actually solve that problem. Mm-hmm. So it's not, a million people show up and you get nothing and you pay money and you're like, are we going to do this again next year? Because I don't know if we can. It's more about, we go get a solution and go get the people. So we'll, come in, do the whole, if I need to do the deck, we will do the deck with all your branding. I don't mind doing that. It's just to make sure that everybody will be engaged with you and understand so you can build that relationship. And then on the small company, startup, agency, whoever side, that's a lot about we make sure we manage that relationship and communication because, you may speak one way and they may speak another way. And I understand both of y'all, so I just need to be here just making sure everybody says the same thing.
It's a little coaching there.
A little coaching there, yeah.
So you actually get them from 20 slides down to less than 20 slides?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. You should probably start another company just doing that.
I feel like so.
We call
like
it slide down.
Right, slide down. You just need this. Why do you have that?
Yes.
Where did the name Fishbowl come from?
Yeah, so one day I was, as we were, looking at the different services that we could offer, I was like, oh, this is a cool concept, something that we can do. I was like, well, it'd be a good name for it, and, I was, in the shower, and I thought about Shark Tank. I'm like, okay, Shark Tank. But I'm like, what we're doing is actually like kind of like the reverse of Shark Tank. So I see Fishbowl as a reverse of a big Shark Tank. So,
and it took me a second.
I said, this is pretty cool. And I pitched to Michael. He was like, I love it. So,
Nice. Any favorites you guys have had come out of the fishbowls you've done so far? There's this one where you can't say names because it's similar to Dan. It's a company in Atlanta that does telecom. May have an office in Dallas.
Well, I can say while we were, proving the whole fishbowl concept, we kind of, it's kind of a blend of Fishbowl and another service that we offer called Finish Up. And we were, Invest Atlanta had reached out to us for their hackathons they do throughout the year. And part of the challenge with, hackathons, and this does relate to Fishbowl, is when you get involved in a hackathon, you know, you're a sponsor, you pay $25,000 for a t-shirt. At the end
in
of the
hat.
In a hat. At the end of the hackathon, it's like, well, whether it's the first, second, or third place team or whoever, you say, well, I like that group there. I like to work with them. But there's no process for that. So basically with the whole finish up play, what we do is that we finish what hackathon started. So when Invest Atlanta engaged us and asked if we can help with APS, it was kind of a blend of fishbowl and finish up, to where we were not going to get involved if we couldn't provide value, and we were not going to get involved if there wasn't going to be the at least the exploration of where can the idea and concept that we created, if it can go to the next level, whether it's a proof of concept, prototype, or a finished product. So we was able to put together a proof of concept during the hackathon that APS fell in love with. We met with them, and now we're commercializing our product for them.
That's awesome. Yeah, the concept of finish up, I like that. That's another new phrase to me, but definitely we've seen a lot of that where the hackathons would be great progress during the weekend, and then you know, once the teams are gone, the thing dies on the vine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which always makes me a little sad.
Yeah,
yeah.
Real sad.
But another question for you guys. So you guys mentioned CES. Did you guys go out to CES? Or
yeah.
You guys?
Yeah.
So this is our second year. We get hired by a company that works with Intel and Panasonic to basically augment the staff on the floor. So for a week, I got to talk about 4K televisions. So I can tell you all about Panasonic's Mozilla Power OS television.
I'm holding out for 8K televisions.
We don't have those yet, but they do have business solutions. So if you go buy a business tablet, I didn't get to see it. I was just standing talking about 4K and $60,000 speakers, which were really sounded really good. But we go out there and we help become part of the floor, engage the people, and so that's always a lot of fun. So we're in Vegas for an entire week and don't have to go to Vegas but once a year. So.
Nice. Yeah. Any cool mobile tech you guys saw? Any favorites when you're out there?
Well, we had some really cool wearable technologies. I was over with Intel, and just want to let everyone know that Intel is inside of everything. I'm
sorry. They did pay you to say that.
I've seen the sticker, yeah.
Is the show over?
but I had some really cool wearable technology for the women out there who are listening. They have this real cool wearable tech. It's like a fashion bracelet called
the Mika bracelet.
Yeah, Mika. It's my intelligent communication accessory. Yes, 2 points. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I thought that was pretty cool. So just seeing how, you know, wearables is becoming a part of your everyday life was pretty interesting.
Nice. So the Internet of Things taking over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were talking before the show. I was reading about Elon Musk and crew was talking about the singularity and once the computers gain sentient awareness. So I know we all seen Terminator.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you guys have, is there any thought about that or any personal thoughts? This is kind of a weird off-the-wall question, but I think a lot about mobility and Internet of Things. I'm seeing it all these shows. If we have devices that all have all this information about it, what happens when either somebody hacks it or, you know, the system itself, you know, views you as not operating me right correctly. I'm going to stop. My car doesn't like how I drive. It's not going to take support. What happens there?
That would be a great arbitrator in the world, wouldn't it? I mean, look at everything that's going on right now and you think, how could human intelligence make a judgment, right, on anything? And how could artificial intelligence, what would it decide if it did an analysis of today?
It would be a little strange. Yeah.
It would be a little strange. Yeah.
I could see why in the movie Terminator they wipe us all out.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't necessarily all make the best decisions.
So right, I don't. Right. You know, when I watched there's a couple movies out now about Hawking and just his personal life story, and you think about how technology has enabled him to become a pretty good communicator for someone who can no longer communicate.
Yeah.
Right. You know, taken to the extreme. Well, let's not take it to the extreme. You know, we are so far away from using mobile devices to aid me beyond avoiding traffic, right? And maybe my Fitbit, right? And a few other things. I mean, really? I mean, we got a long way to go.
Thermostat in your house, car. Yeah. Where's your car in the parking lot? I mean, for you, like remembering your kids' names.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. And I'm really glad that you gave me the artificial intelligence question, by the way. I didn't know if there was a corollary there between our relationship and giving me the age.
But since you got on the phone, you remember stuff a lot better. It's really weird.
It's true. It is. It's better than meds. So the whole thing of really, and we see such a slow adoption of technology compared to those of us who live it every day, right, or so much closer to it. I want this device to do so much more. So I'm not saying that it's not a reality. I think there are probably so many ways to hide from it that we're unaware of. You know, to get off the grid is probably not as difficult as one thinks. So I think it's, you know, the pendulum swings both ways. We got a great amount of fear. We have a great amount of enthusiasm. Reality, to me, is someplace in the middle. But no doubt, quality of life could be improved substantially with the help of better decision-making.
Yeah. Any, Michael, your thoughts? Chemical engineer. You're probably a little concerned about the non-chemical, non-organic devices. Mm.
Right? Well, I mean, for us, we have a whole course in chemical engineering on safety where they talk about all the failures we had and how many people we killed, which is a very sobering statistic as chemical engineer. The systems and the process and the controls, you know, a lot of that stuff is systemized and run by machines already. You know, they're not going to care if I'm tired. They can actually still do the job. So I think there's, like Dan was saying, there's a healthy fear on one side, you know, where people don't want to have that. I think there have been some interesting movies like Transcendence, Her, and the other ones come out lately kind of addressing that subject. I think we're going to have to get to a point where there's mass adoption before it becomes an issue. And then it's also how we view technology, too. I know the majority of consumers, whether they realize it or not, actually use it to aid them. And it's not the end-all, be-all. I think in the worlds that we talk about, the singularity being, you know, Terminator and everybody's going to come kill us and they create Skynet, is the world where we are literally, technology does everything. And yeah. I don't see that happening. This is going to be more like Ghost in the Shell or anything bionic where that helps us kind of aid and, you know, keep living or stuff like that before it gets to be kind of, you know, ridiculously crazy. And plus the self-driving car by Google, they've just reached like a million miles with like no accidents.
I think they had one. Well, I think somebody hit the car in the parking lot.
Right.
Right. And then it was probably my wife.
And then on the flip side of that, you see that Uber was just kicked out of North Carolina. So reconcile those two things, right? Yeah, you can't use Uber in North Carolina, I think it was. I saw that on Bloomberg this morning. Yeah.
Is this where I make some
that's
going to
hurt my
jokes?
Brother. He's an Uber driver in North Carolina. Yeah.
So okay, where's the artificial intelligence there? I don't know.
Well, I have an AI story. So we got invited to be part of this beta where if you send me an email and I'm too consumed, you'll get correspondence from my assistant. Her name is Amy. And it is so spooky because how we got invited was I was scheduling a meeting with one of the VPs for Mashable. You know, we've been engaged with them for the past year after South by Southwest. And so he said, the guy Darren was like, hey, I'm Cole, my assistant Amy, she'll, you know, get something on our calendar. So I'm going back and forth with this person and we're just kind of joking. And she actually asked about my name. So what does M. Cole stand for? So I told her the whole story behind the name. So she just started calling me Diamond. And it was like personal. It was pretty cool. But then I looked at her email signature was a little different. It was at x.ai. So I looked it up and it was artificial intelligence. I'm like, dude, I said, I have to get involved with this. How can I be part of the beta? So now I use Amy, and Amy scheduled a lot of our meetings. And if it's a new meeting, I'll sit down with the person and say, I said, how was Amy? She's my new assistant. Oh, Amy was great. She was real responsive. And I said, well, you know she's not real. Then they're like, what do you mean she's not real? And I explained that. It's AI. And so for us, when it comes to scheduling, you know, Amy runs everything.
Nice. When's she taking over for Siri? Because I'm tired of yelling at Siri. I had to turn her off. I felt bad. There's like some small lady in my phone named Siri, and she doesn't like me anymore.
Yeah.
And it's weird, though, because people have a mindset. I think, Michael, you mentioned this, like that, you know, it hasn't gotten there yet, and people think it has. But like even that, the technology is amazing, but it still can't, you know, I'm like, when is my kid's birthday? And it's like, here are some birthdays of famous people. I'm like, that does not have Siri.
Right. I mean, it's going to take a while. And I mean, I have Bluetooth in my car. I've had for the last 8 years. And I mean, I hit dial by name. I did that this morning. I have to yell at my car to like get it. It's dial by name. It's three words. It's not, I'm not saying a whole, you know, six word phrase sentence. It's really simple. And so technology has to get to a point where we are using it enough for it to justify people spending hours and hours and hours and making that better. Mm-hmm. And then if you're worried about the singularity, if you look at it, a lot of, there's a lot less emotion in the machines, which is why they run plants. And there are a lot of controls that do that because they don't make bad judgment calls a lot of the time. It's when you start getting emotions involved, which is the whole design thinking thing, is when it gets weird.
Yes, yeah, so don't program your machine to have emotion.
Yes.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Got it. Got it. Dan, anything else?
I'm not touching that one.
Awesome. Thank you guys for being on the show this morning. It was fantastic. So Dan Hummerch from Star Mobile, it's starmobileinc.com, and Michael Flanagan, and at dot, wait, sorry, M. Cole.
There you go.
Not, I said dot M. Cole earlier. M. Cole Jones. And you guys are at Covello, C-O-V-E-L-L-O.
Like Joe.
Co.
Yeah, that co. Like,
awesome. Thank you guys for being on the show, and it was awesome.
Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.